big show for you today. It is a big draft breakdown here. Justin Boone joins me from the NFL Scouting Combine to talk through some quarterback news that we have been hearing this week. Then we dive into five sleeper prospects he wants you to watch out for. And then the show gets classed up by NBC Sports' own Connor Rogers joins us to give you a full breakdown on what you need to watch this week at the Combine, prospects to know, names and things to figure out, all that more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. Once again, live here at the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis, and joining me to talk a little ball, it is our guy, Justin Boone. Boone, what's going on, buddy?
It's been a great week so far. This is my first time at the Combine. It's great getting to see some of the crew from Yahoo, right? Catching up a little bit. It's been a minute since we got to hang out in person. We only get to do this a few times a year. And getting to see, I have to say, the whole setup that our crew has put up here, incredible, just unbelievable work behind the scenes. Sadly, people don't get to see that side of it, but we get to see it here, and it is great.
I think next year we should have like a shot on Colin and Madison and Adi back there, like just grinding, just working away. We're just up here yucking it up, you know, just talking ball. They're actually back there doing some real deal work. So this is exciting to see. It's your first Combine, Boone. So out of 5 stars, what would you rate the Combine?
Well, this year, the Combine itself, the event is a 5.
Okay.
But as we're going to talk a little bit about today, this draft class makes it slightly less exciting, right? Fantasy-wise, there's sort of a quick drop-off after the top names, and that's the only part of it that's, you know, not as exciting. I would like to be here and have, you know, normally I would have 10 sleepers to talk about. Today we're going to talk about 5, and even when I put that list together, it just wasn't as exciting as most years.
I think the theme of the offseason is, this is going to be a stretch. And that's perfect for our show here today, because in our first segment, we're going to be talking through some news from the Combine that matters for fantasy. And yes, I am stretching with some of these news items that we're going to be talking about here. So spoiler for that one. Then as Boone said in segment 2, we're going to be diving into some sleepers that he's got to bring to the table. We got 5 there. And then in the final segment, this show's going to get a little classier. Connor Rogers of NBC Sports and the NFL Stock Exchange is going to be joining us live here to give us a deep dive look at the class. So, Boone, with that, let's jump into it. Like I said, we have some news items, some quarterbacks to discuss here. First, we found out today that the Colts have given Anthony Richardson, former 4th overall pick, permission to seek a trade. We also found out from Stephen Holder of ESPN, who's covered the team forever, that he has regained vision in his right eye. So
that's important for a quarterback.
That's a good start. So Anthony Richardson likely on the move here. It's, again, how much does this matter for fantasy? We will find out. But we know that when he's a guy that's on the field, he certainly is someone that can put up some points.
Yeah, despite all his struggles, he definitely was good for fantasy. And when he was in the lineup, when he was starting, you were getting him in your fantasy lineup every single time. And I think this just makes total sense. He needs a fresh start. It seems like that entire organization had lost faith, had lost confidence in him, from the players to the coaches to basically everybody. So let's see him get another chance somewhere else. And we talked about it on Tuesday show. How many quarterbacks have we seen who were drafted high, struggled, didn't make it happen in their first destination, went, took a backup job somewhere else, and eventually came full circle and ended up having some success? And let's hope that Anthony Richardson gets that opportunity.
I still feel like there's a small chance for him to be that guy, because the reality for a player like Richardson, I just think that this got lost along the way in Indianapolis, was that he's a guy that was going to take some time. Like, he was a very inexperienced player, and then unfortunately, very similar to J.J. McCarthy in Minnesota, like, he was a guy who needed reps, he hadn't played a ton, and then he just got injured a bunch, so you're not able to get those reps with him. I think, and then they sort of kind of tried to slow play it a little. It's like, okay, well, maybe we'll kind of start, you know, Daniel Jones, and then maybe Daniel Jones had the strong start to the year. It's just like, again, the path for him got very murky very quick in Indianapolis. But do you think there's like a destination out there that he could go to and maybe recover some of this value?
Well, we had this game on Tuesday's show, right? Every time we talked about a quarterback, where should they go? Wouldn't it be great to send him to Minnesota? And I know you talked about how maybe that environment isn't quite as good as everyone makes it out to be, but attaching someone like him to Kevin O'Connell, that seems like that would be a great fit to give him that opportunity. I don't know that that would actually happen, especially with J.J. McCarthy there. I think they're looking for somebody who's a little more of a stable veteran that they could help kind of bring him along and perhaps and probably give them some starts this year. I don't think Anthony Richardson's that guy. I think he really does need to be rebuilt, have some time on the sidelines, and get an opportunity in just a completely different environment.
There's obviously that famous sideline or on-field interaction post-game with him and Kevin O'Connell for when I believe Flacco started against the Vikings and was terrible when they had benched Richardson a couple of years ago. And even after that happened, I was like, oh, he'll be a Minnesota Viking at some point in his career. I think I jokingly said it on the show. Like, it is probably possible. Obviously, O'Connell has some faith in who Richardson was supposed to be as a prospect. And it's just, you're right, it's a little duplicative with where McCarthy is at this point. It doesn't make a ton of sense. But I will say, we talked about this on the show the other day, and then I've talked about it elsewhere. It's just like that run game being what it was last year was pretty problematic. And Richardson, I think, would come in and increase the potential there for them as a rushing team. The other part of it too is, like I said, I just think their pass catching core is not as deep as people make it out to be. So you get a guy in Richardson who's probably not going to have a lot of pass attempts.
It's true.
Just funnel it to one guy. Hyper efficiency. You're running RPOs. Your first read target is going to get the ball a ton. Just that's Justin Jefferson. So I think in theory it fits. In reality, I'm not sure it happens.
I wonder too. I know all the reasons why quarterbacks kind of get pushed out onto the field sooner rather than later, but I wonder, seeing all these guys come in, take some time, end up having to go to another team before finding some success, do you think teams will eventually kind of rethink it and go, maybe we should get one of these guys and sit him for a couple years? Like, I don't know why teams haven't really tried that approach. It seems like they should.
I agree. I think it just quarterback. And the other thing about it too is that we rush the development, but it's so clearly like a slow developing position to mentally catch up to everything.
Absolutely.
I mean, quarterbacks are in their prime of their careers in like, you know, 27, 28, when other players like running backs or even receivers, you're starting to see that like downward trend at that point. And it's because of the mental load. I mean, for a guy like Jared Goff's a great example that he's in the prime of his career right now because he's seen everything. He's like, it's why Joe Flacco at 40.
I was going to say the same thing.
It's like still,
the perfect example.
It's still relevant because, I mean, number one, he had an absolute hose when he came in. Into the league, very physically talented from an arm strength perspective. But then again, like, he's just seen every coverage at this point. He knows what he's looking for pre and post snap. And you just don't get the time to do that now at this point in the league.
And it just instills a confidence when you have a veteran like that out there for the players, but also for the coaches, right? That they can just trust that their scheme is going to be executed properly and you're not just going to have kind of chaos on the field, which sadly is what we saw often with Anthony Richardson.
Yeah.
And yet for fantasy, it was still working
out because
of the rushing ability. Yeah.
That's why it's just like a guy like this is important to track this offseason. Shoot, even if he ends up in like Cleveland or something, you know, I mean, that might be stretching a little bit there, but like he would have more fantasy value starting in Cleveland than a guy like Shedeur Sanders would, just because of the athletic upside for a guy like Anthony Richardson. So yeah, that trade is actually the one I think is like more realistic, as he gets thrown into some quarterback battle like that, as opposed to a battle with a guy like McCarthy. So we'll see what happens with Anthony Richardson, but certainly somebody to monitor here. Also, on the quarterback news, our own Charles Robinson on Inside Coverage yesterday had a pretty interesting report on Joe Burrow and what he's been hearing here. Let's take a listen to what C-Rob had to say.
A couple of teams are of the mind that they believe Burrow wants out of Cincinnati. That doesn't mean that would happen. It doesn't mean they're right either, by the way.
Yeah.
If that were ever to happen, who has the ammunition?
The Jets have the ammunition.
Three first-round picks in 2027 is going to be a monster draft, banger draft, right? But I'm just saying it's interesting to hear teams, when you ask them, tell me about your quarterback options. Three different executives, three different teams brought up Burrow without me bringing him up, because I think it's nonsensical. I just can't believe.
I
think there's no way you can trade.
Mike Brown would have to sell the team.
Yeah.
And he would never sell the team.
But they bring it up and they're convinced that he really wants out of there.
So, I mean, bottom line, we don't think Joe Burrow is about to get traded. But I do think it's interesting that Charles, who's super plugged in, said three different executives with three different teams at least are throwing it out there that this might be a possibility. And here's... sometimes with these like big name quarterback rumors, I always come back to like when Jim Harbaugh got hired by the Chargers, there was this like fan fiction idea that the Vikings were going to trade for Justin Herbert because Jim Harbaugh just loved J.J. McCarthy, and he was going to, which is like, oh my God, think about that in hindsight. And he just loved it. He was just always gassing up his guy McCarthy, and there were all these like weird little internet rumors about that. That's not a when there's smoke, there's fire situation. There is at least like enough smoke about this that, again, I don't think he's about to get traded, but like something is up that this continues to be a talking point, because this is not the first time we've heard like, oh, is Joe Burrow disgruntled? And like, could the Bengals maybe trade him? And I think maybe this is just a little bit more than the typical fan fiction nonsense.
I mean, I will also say though, just because teams are out there throwing his name around, they're trying to manifest it, perhaps.
Sure,
right?
Yeah, like, yeah,
they,
yeah,
they would
yeah.
love to see him.
That's a good point. The buyers are very interested.
Yes. And I know over the years, I mean, whether it was rumors or even some reports about kind of how the Bengals organization is run, some questions about that that could make a guy like Joe Burrow unhappy, the way they're treating some of the players, some of the contract issues. But he got his receivers signed. He got his guys. It seems like so strange that at that point, knowing that you have Chase and Higgins, that now he's going to walk away from that. Like, that's what really stuns me about it.
I agree with you. Like, it is interesting in that way. But the other part of this is just like the Bengals do business different than everybody else. And at this point, they're starting to like have a Groundhog Day season every year where it's like, okay, at some point Joe gets hurt. Which that's the thing that actually is a big part of this too. Like, he's just had a lot of injuries and he's missed time. And I think that's a conversation point all to itself. But it's like, okay, either he misses some time in camp or early in the season, whatever. We just mess around with like a backup quarterback or whatever. But then the defense is just such a mess.
Yes.
That I keep saying this all the time this year, the narrative about Josh Allen, like how could he not make a Super Bowl run? Like, there's no Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs, there's no Lamar Jackson in the playoffs, there's no Joe Burrow in the playoffs. Like, Bengals ain't been making the playoffs recently. Like, that's not a usual one. I know he went to a Super Bowl, but like, that was 2021. A lot has changed since 2021. My reaction to this really is less about like, oh, could he be traded, more it's like, Cincinnati, it's time to get freaking serious like about this team, because you do run the risk of, yeah, like, money and keeping guys around helps, but at some point you do run the risk of alienating a star quarterback here. And it's not like we haven't seen this actually happen with the Bengals before.
Yes, and fantasy wise we want to see him stay there, right?
Yeah.
Like, all the pieces. It's not just the receivers. It's also Chase Brown in that backfield, who it took him a little while last year, but eventually really got going for fantasy. I want to see that all continue. So I hope that this doesn't turn into something. I hope he doesn't get moved, because I think as good as Burrow is, to leave that environment, like you're saying, with the great receivers, with the bad defense, mm-hmm. the perfect kind of fantasy setup,
yeah.
and to go to now potentially an unknown situation, I'm sure there's lots of teams out there that would love to see that happen and try to get him. I still don't think it's going to happen, and I'm kind of crossing my fingers that it doesn't from a fantasy perspective.
It is kind of funny that the reason that Cincinnati, you know, and maybe Burrow's irritated is, you know, obviously the defense. I mean, it's just crazy. Like, even Jamar Chase has like said it, like, we got to get stops. Like, he's just outright saying, like, we all know what the problem is. It's not us. It's not our side of the ball. Like, they got to get that thing over there figured out. But that is a big reason why it is such a fantasy carnival. So in a weird way, it's like, we don't really know what to root for here. Do we want them to keep the defense bad, or do we want them to keep Joe Burrow happy? It's hard to say. The one thing I think we do know for sure, though, is just, again, why we're having this Burrow conversation, this Richardson conversation. I said, like, again, the theme of the offseason is, well, that's a little bit of a stretch. Like, this is the way the state of quarterback right now is. There are too many openings and not enough solutions. So, as I've said, we're going to see teams try to come up with these creative ways to solve this problem. Manifesting and wish casting a Burrow trade is one of them. The other one that we've consistently heard this week is that there are some backup quarterbacks that could be changing spots here and potentially in some camp battles. A couple names we've heard. By the way, these are not the names I thought we'd be talking about, but Tyson Bagent and Andy Dalton are available for trade. And I don't know that Andy Dalton's anybody's like quarterback solution in the year 2026. That would be a big stretch. But the Bagent thing is at least interesting, because the way Ben Johnson and Ryan Poles were talking about it the other day at their media availabilities almost said it was like a foregone conclusion, essentially, that somebody would be trading for Tyson Bagent to get a starting job elsewhere, which I just didn't have on my bingo card, I guess.
Well, I mentioned earlier, like, how come teams aren't kind of noticing these quarterbacks taking more time and actually giving them more time? Maybe the thing they're taking away now, knowing that it's a copycat league is, hey, we can go get a backup quarterback from somebody and potentially turn him into a starter. And now other teams are trying to make that happen. And we've seen Bajan actually has played well when he's gotten opportunities. He does seem like a quarterback that could potentially have a chance to do something as a starter, but these are stretches, right? And that's what this time of year is all about. I think the important thing for fantasy is if you are in a dynasty league, if you're in a super flex league, always remember the value that backup quarterbacks have. And it depends on the depth of your roster and how many bench spots you have and all that sort of stuff. But for years, we've preached, you know, grab every running back, right? Make sure you have all the backup running backs, because could be one injury, could be two injuries, and all of a sudden a guy has a ton of value because he's getting volume. In super flex leagues, backup quarterbacks are just like that. A quarterback goes down, it could be one start, it could be multiple starts, it could be the rest of the season. They can have value very quickly and be one injury away, guys. And even if you don't need them, you could now trade them perhaps to the manager who had the starter on that team and get some value in return for it. So it's just kind of, I know you always hate when I talk about playing dynasty like a stock market, but that's one of those ways where you throw those guys on your bench and you get to cash in, whether it's having them in your lineup or whether it's potentially getting picks or something in return.
No, that's totally a different situation too, because sometimes you can also, like I do this. We view this the same way in terms of the backup quarterbacks and Superflex. I'm always cycling these guys. And I did this a couple of years ago in one of my leagues, and I ended up with Brock Purdy out of it, you know? And like that can happen out of this as well. I'm not saying that like Tyson Bajan's about to be the next Brock Purdy or something, but let's just say like he's out there, you stick him on your bench, he gets traded to the Cardinals, which I know there's been some talk about. Like that would actually be a really interesting environment. We talked about Malik Willis with Arizona with Jory the other day, and that would be a very different situation because it's totally completely different style of quarterback where there might be some more passing volume. And if he is that guy, and like I said, we don't know Tyson Bajan's like a starting NFL quarterback, but I do respect the hell out of Ben Johnson's opinion. Like obviously knows ball and is really demanding on these players. And he just loves this guy. Like I was saying to you before we got on air that I can already see the headline now somewhere in the 2030s. Like Ben Johnson gives up play calling duties to offensive coordinator Tyson Bajan. Like he's going to be on his coaching staff the minute he retires, because that's just how highly he views him.
Yeah, we have seen a lot of that. I'm curious though, with this news coming out this week about these guys, when you go look at the transactions, are we going to see these names picked up? Because this time of year, there's not a lot of movement in dynasty leagues. I think we're going to see those names at the top of some of the trending lists that they're getting picked up, and I think they should be.
I agree. I think they should be. I love that Boone puts a good, actionable fantasy note at the end of this mega stretch segment about all of these random quarterbacks. The rearranging of deck chairs on the Titanic quarterbacks landscape, that's where we're at right now. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got five sleeper prospects from our guy, Justin Boone. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We've got five sleeper prospects from our guy Justin Boone here. Let's get it started with a wide receiver, thank God. So I'm in my specialty zone here. Who we got?
So a little peek behind the scenes for everyone. Like we said, I was on vacation after Super Bowl. We didn't talk much. We got to the combine on Monday, and it was probably 5-10 minutes into seeing you where I said, okay, Malachi Fields, what's the deal? Am I right that I have him higher than the expert consensus right now? Am I wrong? I was happy that you do agree that he is an intriguing player. A guy who you think about, he's probably, to be honest, more likely to come in and be a strong number two receiver. Probably most likely outcome not turning into a true number one, but I see enough alpha traits in his game that I think that possibility is there. I think of a guy like Nico Collins. We had this conversation off air where now Nico Collins, absolute star, no questions asked. But when he came out, there were a ton of questions around him. There was even suggestions he might play tight end because he was kind of big.
Insane.
And now you look at what he's become. And maybe Fields will be like that, where it might take a couple years for him to get to that level if he ever gets there. But yeah, a very exciting player. Great size speed combo. Not that he's like super fast, but like a long strider, right? Can kind of sneak up on you. I think he's decent after the catch too. And in terms of like bigger, you know, wideouts like that, you don't normally see them give you that much after the catch, but I think he gives you a little bit something there that boosts his value. Just circus catches, like just unbelievable in that area. So yeah, I really like him right now. If you look at ECR, he's the wide receiver 12 going off the board, 25th, so early third round of dynasty rookie drafts. I have him more as, I have my wide receiver 7 in this class. I think there's a pretty, you know, strong group ahead of him that he's not breaking into, but I have him as a late first round, early second round rookie value. And we're going to see this year in terms of dynasty rookie drafts, there's about 6 to 8 prospects that I think are going to go at the top. After that, late first round, all the way to like that early third, it's going to vary wildly in different. There's not really a consensus in that range. And that's why you see somebody like Fields having the ECR at 25. And I'm looking at him as, you know, around 12, 13, 14 in that range.
Yeah. It's the line I keep using on like all these shows I'm doing this week is that at wide receiver specifically, there's going to be a lot of preference based debates where it's like, what do you like? What's your flavor? You're going to value that guy. And then you're going to get in these arguments on Twitter like, no, this guy's better than this guy. It's really just about what do you like. And I think for Fields specifically, there's going to be some big variance there because like I've talked to JJ Zacharyson, who in my opinion is the best data prospector that we have in the fantasy industry. There's some questionable data prospecting out there. His stuff is really, really good, and his stuff isn't really that high on Malachi Fields. Just from our early conversations, obviously, JJ is going to put his draft guide out. Everybody should check that out and purchase it. Not that he needs my promotion for that, but there you go anyways. Again, see what that like final conclusion is. But yeah, there's some mixed inputs for him from a data and a production standpoint, but I agree with you that he's really intriguing because I don't know if he's going to become Nico Collins, but the reason I like that comparison from you is more like the journey of Nico Collins' career because he got on the field really early because he's a true X receiver. And he's on the field all the time because he's a true X receiver. Almost like Alec Pierce in a way, similar thing. Like the guy was just always out there. And then finally, year 4, he really has that big year where he could be cashing in. For Nico Collins, it was year 3. Same sort of thing. Like as long as you're not a complete disaster. And I think both of those guys were way better on film, especially Nico was just like way better on film than the production noted. You get that time to develop, your game grows. I really like that suggestion for Fields.
And one of the reasons why I was so quick to ask you about him, other than you are great at your receiver work, is I think the biggest mistakes I've made in terms of drafting dynasty rookie receivers is that type of guy, that big body guy, that those are the guys that they look very, very exciting. And how many have we seen come in and really amount to nothing or, you know, have kind of disappointing careers? So we always learn, we always refine our process. And that's one where anytime I get overly excited about a guy like that, I'm way ahead of consensus on him. I kind of take a step back and I'm like, okay, I better double check on this one because it might just be my bias that I really like going after players like that.
Well, that's the thing. Again, it doesn't mean it's going to work out, but in this world now where we're living in more 12 and 13 personnel, these multiple tight ends, like being a true outside X receiver that can play on the line of scrimmage is really, really valuable. And I think that especially for those dynasty rookie picks, you can put a premium on that because the like smaller slot jitterbug types, those guys aren't going to be on the field as much as I've talked over and over again the last month or so. Last note on Fields, I thought was a much better zone beater than I expected. Typically, these like outside perimeter players are more man coverage heavy, and his man coverage stuff is solid, but I actually thought like his spatial awareness along the boundary, zone recognition overall was really quality. So that could be a way that he doesn't just stick as like a sacrificial X receiver either. So love this one for your first one. He's a player I really like, and I'm probably going to be ahead of consensus on as well. This is actually true for the next player that you're going to bring up here as well.
Okay, because we haven't talked about him yet. Ted Hurst, Georgia State. And right away, that is the biggest question mark.
Grinding that Georgia State tape, baby.
To the NFL, that is a big, big jump. And that is the one that you can't be sure about. You can't know whether that jump in level of competition is going to be something that he can handle or not. This is more of a project. This is more of a guy that I think is going to take some time. Tall, thin, like to see maybe a little muscle on. You got to add a little bulk there maybe to put up with the NFL game. But the ball skills are incredible with him. It seems so funny me sitting here talking about receivers to you. Normally it's the other way around. So
what if
I
was just like
a strange experience?
Terrible. No ball skills. Like this, Boone, get off the set here. No, but I think you're onto something with this one, so keep going.
Like his ability to box out defenders, you know, I really think he could be a true red zone threat. So very, very interested in him. But again, he is somebody that is, this is a true sleeper. This is further, we're talking like late third, fourth round of Dynasty rookie drafts here. And again, a player that might take a little bit of time. I don't know that he's going to arrive on the scene and immediately contribute, but somebody that I am willing to take later, even though I've said before, when you get to those rounds of rookie drafts, I'm not normally drafting receivers in those range, because when you have to wait on them, they can become roster cloggers very quickly. And you keep trying to talk yourself into, no, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And then 3 years later, you're dropping them from your roster and you just burn that spot for that time.
The player I do compare him to, though, shown on screen here, is Torrey Horton, who was kind of maybe not one of those roster cloggers. Obviously, it looked like he was about to have that breakout before he got injured in his rookie season. We'll see what happens with Horton, but they're pretty similar in that you mentioned it, like wiry, lankier, thinner type of receivers. Probably a guy that I would like to use as a movement Z, but they win over the middle of the field in pretty similar ways too. And they have that downfield potential. Like Torrey Horton was a guy that rips it downfield. I think Hurst can be that player in time. So yeah, we've seen some potential like day two buzz on him. If he does go day two, that would be pretty validating for him as more of like a third round rookie pick. But yeah, I really like Ted Hurst as a sleeper in this class. I think he's got some ability to play outside as well. So a lot of good stuff in his profile. Let's get to your third one here, and let's stop talking wide receivers so that you're not looking at me all nervous about what you're
exactly. Yeah, Harmon, is it all right? Is it okay?
Let's let you cook, big dog.
Let's go to running back. And I think we've already said on the show that this year's class, there is one guy at the top, Jeremiah Love, a very, very good prospect. And then after that, there's not really a consensus of even who's the second running back in this class. And we're going to go a little bit deeper on this one to Mike Washington Jr., who he has really started to rise. And he's still a sleeper, I think, technically. But he had a great week at the Senior Bowl. There's been a lot of hype, a lot of buzz around him. So he's getting to that point now where I was almost skeptical whether I should put him on this list because he's been getting so much talk. But ideal size, 6'1", 228. He's got the juice to power that frame too. Definitely willing to take on defenders. Really, really like him. I want to see when he gets to the pros, are we gonna see him become that three down back? I think he has that. And I think he could be a mid-round steal this year and a guy that is probably going to end up going in the second round. And I think that's going to be a nice value. But again, going back to the way that I think Dynasty rookie drafts are going to go this season, a guy like this, if he gets the right landing spot, would not shock me at all if he sneaks his way into that late first round.
Yeah, that's what's going to be fun about this class is when we do finally get those landing spots revealed. Because with running back, it's just tough. Like, there's, I think, fewer open seats for true starters right now than usual. It feels like most teams are actually pretty set at running back, which lines up pretty well with this class. And then, by the way, too, we talked about this with Jory. Like, there's a lot of free agents available, too. So that's going to muddy the picture even further. But it doesn't appear that there's that. I think we're probably going to get one first-round running back, and then that's it. Maybe even just one in the, or two in the top 50. Like, it's not going to be that type of running back class. So what matters then is, like, okay, if a guy like Mike Washington goes to a team that has maybe an unsettled back, field like a Minnesota. We keep wanting to send these quarterbacks to Minnesota. Team needs a running back, dude.
They're
probably cutting Aaron Jones. Jordan Mason, he's aight, but like that run game not being what it was supposed to be last year is an issue. So I think that's like just something to monitor for running backs, like specifically system fit, landing spot, opportunity, the whole deal, as we know.
I want to say one more thing before we move on to the next guy here, because I don't want to make it seem like it's all sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows with these guys. I am talking them up as sleepers, but one issue with him that I do want to bring up, there's some ball security stuff there that I think it's not a real concern.
Okay.
I think that's something that can get cleaned up very quickly, but just something in mind that, you know, some of these guys, because of the way we're talking about this class, some of these guys do have these red flags. They're not like pure,
totally
clean prospects. That's why they're sleepers.
That's why they're sleepers.
That's why they're
going to
be going
right
a little later in the real draft and potentially a little bit later in Dynasty rookie drafts.
That's why we just talked about a guy from freaking Georgia State. It's the sleepers section. The flaw might be exactly where he's coming from. Okay, let's get to your fourth one here.
All right, Damon Claiborne, Wake Forest. We're going from a ideal size 6'1", over 220, to now a smaller, quicker back. We'll see what he weighs in when he's here at the Combine. But before the Combine, listed under 200 pounds, 5'10". Very quick, though. Pretty good contact balance for a smaller back as well. And you just wonder where he's going to end up, because I don't think he's going to end up being a workhorse in the pros. You know, you'd like to see him, you know, develop in a way where we could get him maybe a little bit bigger, a little more power behind him. But he's never going to be that kind of back. But you want him to land somewhere. Like, think about the Shanahan scheme. How many guys have we seen come through, the Raheem Mosterts, the Matt Bradas of the world, that maybe don't end up having like really long careers as starters and as fantasy options, but guys that come in and have a ton of success? I think he could be that kind of guy. He's going to be probably in a committee, like we're saying, though, but he's somebody that I think is, this is a much, much deeper, it's kind of like we did with the Ted Hurst thing. You get one a little higher and then we're going way down with it. But he's somebody that I think needs to be on people's radar for the third round, for the fourth round of Dynasty Rookie Draft.
I love it. Yeah, just that sort of a home run hitter potentially in a backfield. I like that call. Yeah, just the right rushing ecosystem. If it's an outside zone system where it's just like, hey, get to the perimeter and let him rip, I certainly think that there can be some appeal there. Let's get one more from you before we have to go to break.
Let's go with a tight end, Joe Royer out of Cincinnati. Harman.
Okay.
This is a sleeper section.
That's a real person.
We're going a little bit deeper. And there's a reason that I'm bringing him up too, because I think you're going to like this. We talked so much about Tucker Kraft last season. And what was the one like main thing?
I'm in. No, I'm
one of the main things that we love about Tucker Kraft is arguably the best yak in terms of tight ends, right? He did it multiple years. He brings that element. I think Royer brings that element as well. He's very feisty with the ball in his hands. His movement too, he's almost got more of like the H-back movement, but he can get downfield. And how many tight ends have we seen come in? He was productive at Cincinnati, don't get me wrong, but I think there's something still to be unlocked with him. And we've seen so many tight ends come in and maybe not have the huge, huge college stats and then get to the pros, get a different opportunity, and boom, become something. It's tough with tight ends. It could take a couple of years, especially when you're talking about a guy that might not have the high-end draft capital, right? So could take a little longer. And always with fantasy, when we're talking about tight ends, is he going to end up somewhere where he's going to be able to be a top two target getter in his offense? Those things will have to be sorted out. But in terms of talent, he could definitely step up, and he's somebody that I think people should be interested in.
You mentioned Tucker Kraft. Like, could he be like that type of guy where he is like an inline blocker as well? AJ Barner is another one that has like become like kind of the poor man's Tucker Kraft in that way, where he's pretty underrated, pops up every now and again. Can he kind of fit into that bucket? I see your comparison actually is Hunter Henry, which I think is it speaks to like that long career that a guy like this can have.
Yeah. And that's, that's a high end comparison. Hunter Henry has had some good fantasy seasons, so there's a wide range of outcomes there. But yeah, definitely a versatile player. And we're just going to have to see the landing spot and figure out if he's going to get that opportunity.
Love it. All right, we are going to take a quick break. We come back, we have Connor Rogers join us. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. Very excited. We have Connor Rogers, first time joining the show. Connor, what's going on, buddy?
I'm chilling, guys. I'm really happy to be here. What an invite.
Yeah, dude, what a get.
Oh my God.
I was like, if we can compile like the top three most handsome draft analysts at the combine, we got to get one of those. Trevor Sikkema, big time. No, I'm just kidding. First person I reached out to. And look, you brought it. You got the gold watch. I mean, my God, like, you're really showing up, man, here in style, bro.
I got to bring something to the table. I don't have any information. If that's what you asked me to do, like, I don't know anything about the draft or fantasy, but I'll sit here and just have a good time.
I was like, Boone and I, couple mediocre looking fellas, like, just, I was like, Connor, if you just come here and just like look
sit.
Handsome,
yeah,
just sit and look handsome while Boone and I talk about God knows what, it's going to really class
we'll
to join
good
up.
Screen grabs out of it for sure.
I walked with Matt last night out of this place for like 8 blocks, and he's like, just sit there. All you have to do is sit there. Nothing else. You'll be good.
Yeah. So, anyway, like, so Connor's going to sit here while,
have a great combo.
Connor, you study the draft like all year long. You also follow the NFL. You're a complete grinder, complete sicko. And complimentary,
yeah,
by the way.
I can tell by the tone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Complimentary. The Perception, one of our subscriptions, is called Sicko Tier for a reason. We love the sickos. You are one of them. Give the people kind of an overview of this draft class and what we can kind of expect throughout the process.
Yeah, it's one where it gets labeled as a bad draft, because I think the narrative around what is a good draft is you have multiple star quarterbacks that we can kind of have the theater around. Do you have like three alpha wide receivers, and then we'll take whatever else we can get? So everyone's like, well, we don't have that, it's not a good draft. So the good news is that we have those three wide receivers at the top that are kind of hard for everybody to decipher right now, with Mekhi Lemon, Carnell Tate, and of course Jordan Tyson, which, if you take out the medicals, which is a big part of this, let's not get away from it, I think he's the best receiver in the draft. So I think that's really exciting. And Trevor and I start this process over summer, where we get the foundation. You try to do a top 10 for every position group, and then you reeval in the midseason, so you adjust the rankings in December or November, whatever you want to call it. Then you do the final rankings in March and April. So when we did the wide receivers, like, we're watching Jordan Tyson, and we're like, man, this guy's got it all right here. But, you know, you got to figure out if injuries are a pattern or bad luck. And that's a tough thing to decipher with him right now, and it matters a lot. You know, obviously the front seven talent in this draft is the storyline after Mendoza, because Mendoza's going to go number one, and then it's how does it fall with David Bailey and Arvell Reese and Sonny Styles and Reuben Bain. So that's where the highlight is of this draft, and I think that'll kind of dictate how the top 15 ultimately falls.
Yeah, that's sort of the vibe for me. It's interesting you feel that way about Tyson. I think like I like Tate and Lemon a lot better.
Well, they're definitely safer.
They're easier projections, I think, too. And the funny thing is, this is what I keep coming back to with this class. It's very much like a preference-based debates with wide receivers, as I keep saying. Like, for me, I just, like, Tate is a great X receiver. That I see that very well. Mekhi Lemon probably more of like a movement guy that can play in the slot. We're going to come back to that.
Totally
come back to that in a second. And then with Tyson, I think he's like that speed Z receiver. You get him like just like Jerry Jeudy. I keep coming back to this with the 2024 Cleveland Browns. Don't be dancing around in those routes. I think sometimes Tyson can like oversell the movements and stuff like that. And good corners are going to be more all over that in the NFL. With Jeudy, he always had that problem as well. Hayden Winks was the one who first made this comparison. It's like, oh, I see like what you're getting. Not a perfect comparison, in my opinion, but I sort of see where you're getting at. Just like, hey, get him on a runway route, one break, and like be decisive as a route runner. The Browns were able to do that with Jeudy in 24. I think a team could probably do that with Tyson.
It's funny. I don't know if it's just like Jets brain with me being in New York and covering that team as well, but I saw a lot of Garrett Wilson in him.
Where he's kind of in that same archetype.
Yeah, we're like, talk about two different ends of the spectrum where Jeudy hasn't had that consistency. Garrett's been great. He just never has a quarterback or a good team. With Tyson, man, like at his size, the acrobat ability, the drop rate plummeted this year. Because anyone that didn't like him over summer was like, the drop rate. And it's like, okay. And then this year, the drop rate went all the way down. It's like, no, he's got good hands now. Like, concentration's there. He's gotten better after the catch. But like you said, the other guys are more projectable. Mekhi Lemon, you know, obviously we have the Big Ten at NBC, and that's a show I get to work on. We get to see a lot of him. Even they get to play Notre Dame. We have them too. It's like, that's the dude. But the slot needs to be open for me with Mekhi Lemon. I'm not going to get cute and be like, okay, you're going to play inside and outside the next. I wouldn't love that. But if you have the slot open for him, he's a demon in terms of that. Separating, tougher at the catch point than his size would indicate. Don't really think he's that fast. I think he's quick, but I don't think he's that fast. Tate is a guy that, like, you play him on the outside. The footwork got so good this year compared to where he was. He's got body control. He's a bigger body. Over the years, I've just started to gravitate towards bigger wide receivers because the hit rate on the smaller guys, it burns you over time, where it's easy to like Carnell Tate.
You're talking to the guy who knows that better than anybody.
And it kind of scars you a little bit over the years where I'm like, I'm only going to like one or two small wide receivers because guess what? Probably only one or two are going to make it from this draft.
Boone, what's like a prospect that you've got kind of a question about this year?
I would say we're worried a little bit on saying this and your reaction, but looking at the quarterback class, kind of like you mentioned, you have Mendoza at the top. I'm kind of worried about every other quarterback in this group, right? Like, and because there's so many teams that need quarterbacks, I'm curious if we see some of these guys get pushed up in the real life draft, and that could confuse fantasy managers thinking that, okay, you got the draft capital, now I'm going to move them up in my dynasty rankings, that sort of thing. When in reality, when I'm looking at Ty Simpson, when I'm looking at Carson Beck, when even looking at Garrett Nussmeier, all those guys just kind of look like career backups to me. I don't really see it. Am I wrong?
Simpson's the hardest one to figure out because it's the tale of two seasons, right? That's the one where it's like, I understand if a team kind of talks themselves into it at a certain point, not in the top 10, maybe not even the top 15. But the Ty Simpson trajectory in September and October was like, this guy's smart. He's seeing it pre-snap. He could throw the middle of the field. He's a decent athlete. He's a good leader. And then it falls off a cliff. But then you also hear that coincides with him having a back injury. But he's not a big quarterback. So it's like people need to be careful with, well, he's hurt, so it's not going to be like that. Well, if he's not that big, is he just going to be hurt?
Right, exactly.
These are the things with the draft that are very, very, like, you need to be careful with. So I lean more with you. And here's the thing. You brought up fantasy and dynasty. Like, are we that excited for Fernando Mendoza in year one and two? And he's grown on me a lot. Like, I had my questions this summer on the Cal tape, took a million sacks, made some bad decisions. Really, this is a guy that works his ass off, and he's a good player, and he deserves to be the number one pick to the Raiders. But did we watch what the Raiders were last year? Are we sure he's going to have the comfort zone that Indiana built to run the ball and use play action? Kubiak will get there.
That's the
thing. I don't know if it's year one What does the rest of the draft and free agency look like? So this quarterback class as a whole, like, we want early returns as rookies. Like, think about how much we talked last year, especially at the end of the year, about Jackson Dart and Tyler Shuck. It's like the returns were pretty solid a lot. I don't know if we get those returns from that class in year one.
With Mendoza, with Mendoza specifically, too, how much do you separate that? Because I really like him a lot because I watch these Indiana receivers, and watching the Indiana receivers actually makes me like the quarterback more, especially watching Surratt, not a guy that separates really well, just consistent like placement on those back shoulders. Yep. You see some like high-level stuff like that, but a lot of it is, you know, kind of Mickey Mouse RPO offense. Like, how much do you separate that from him as an individual player?
It is tough. Now, I love the arm. It's lively, where like you could pretty much ask him in a dropback script to do everything. Where I wonder if things get a little bit more hairy at the next level than they did at Indiana, and you saw some of this at Cal. I think he's a smart runner. I don't think he's a good runner. There's a difference. Like, he's so smart, pre-snap, he'll see things and go, he'll think in his head, like, I'm going to have that space if they do this. He sees the space and he runs. And he's a fine athlete, so he can get the yards. The foot speed is different when you're trying to run away from Reuben Bain and Akeem Mesidor. You're trying to run away from some of these guys in the Big Ten that we saw. It's like, I don't think he's going to create on the move as a thrower, but are they going to ask him to do that often? I don't know about that. I like the play action drop back script for him. The arm, the velocity outside the numbers is big time. Like that, like he's got a real arm outside the numbers. You saw him throw the ball down the field to Charlie Becker. You see what Omar Cooper could do. You brought up Surratt, which I agree. Surratt's the biggest, you know, beneficiary of Mendoza's skill set. So he's going to put the ball on guys, and we're going to love that for Brock Bowers. We're going to learn who else we like that for.
As somebody who I feel, you know, I big time downgraded Sam Darnold last year because I thought leaving that Vikings environment, going to Seattle, I didn't think he was going to be able to continue. I have a lot of faith in Kubiak. I actually do think that Kubiak's probably going to have some success with that offense right away. And that's the thing, because Mendoza, not like that true elite, you know, top pick in a draft, top quarterback. Yeah. I agree with you on that. But next to Kubiak, I think it is going to work out. And I think fantasy-wise, we could see something interesting in year one.
The question is, personnel-wise, what does the offensive line look like that enables Kubiak to be himself, right? Yeah. Establish the run game to build off the play action, where you looked at Seattle, and it's like, there's promise with the tackles. They took Gray Zabel, who I had last year at the last day of the comp. I loved him. Like,
he was
a professional where you sat down and you're like, oh, you feel like a five-year NFL pro. You're going to be ready to roll. Yeah. And shocker, he was. So that line was pretty good, and JSN's a freak. Like, people still don't appreciate it. I guess now they do, but I think for a while people were like, is JSN really that good? It's like, yeah, he's really that good.
Yeah.
So I think we'll get there. It's a matter of, do they have enough assets and ability to get there right away under Mendoza, or do we have to be a little bit patient?
I'd be surprised if Kubiak took that job and they don't invest in that offense significantly away.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And not having like a Nepo baby as your offensive line coach, that'll help as well.
It fell apart.
It was pretty brutal.
They're
there.
Not that bad.
They're like, not, yeah,
they were worse than that's what blew my mind. I watched like that line on paper over summer. I'm like, this is fine. It'll work. And it was worse than it should have been,
like,
obviously.
Scott and Norv Turner were kind of cooking some stuff up at the end of that 24 season with the Raiders. I'm like, yeah, this offensive line is pretty functional.
Right.
And then, yeah, just completely falls apart with pretty much the same personnel, except they kind of mixed and matched some guys, which that's like, what are we doing here? So, yeah, I definitely think Mendoza's probably his life will be a little bit easier with this system than some of the other guys there. So there's that. One question that I have, and you already pulled on the thread here, so we might as well just talk about it. KC Concepcion's a player I really like.
Yeah.
He's that smaller receiver that I always fall for, explosive, wins at all three levels of the route tree. To me, I see a lot of reps of him against press where he stacks guys, clean releases, the whole deal. Does have a drop problem. We can discuss and acknowledge that, but like, how bad am I about to get burned by another like Jaden Reed type? Like, my comparison for him is it's somewhere between like Steph Diggs or is it Jaden Reed, who I think is a really good player.
I think Reed's good too.
Yeah, I love Jaden Reed, but he's never consistently on the field because of like 12 personnel, the heavier stuff.
Sure.
He's more of a slot only guy. So how do you see KC kind of all that together?
I'm closer to you than the consensus because of the agility. That like when you have that level of agility, man, I remember when I started watching Brandon Cisse, the corner on South Carolina. I'm like, all right, Cisse's got some hype right now. Let's dive in. And I watched KC Concepcion, who's not a burner by any stretch of the means, just be able to get off the line of scrimmage and run right by him. I'm like, kind of want to go back to watching Concepcion film right now, right? and the background's super cool. Like, you look at him at that first year at NC State, they're handing the ball like 40 times, and it's like, and what player did I have here? I can't remember who it is. I had a player here, a defender, and I asked, like, who's the best player you went up against college? And it was from 2 or 3 years ago when he was at NC State right away, Concepcion. Mm. And I was like, NC State Concepcion? And he's like, oh, yeah. He's like, and they were handing him the ball. Yeah. He was catching touchdowns. He gets open with his agility. So he's somebody kind of like Omar Cooper Jr. It's easy to talk yourself into him because I think what he's good at, I also don't think he's that small, right?
Yeah, I'm really interested to get him and Lemon's measurables.
Admittedly, like I didn't have him on a spring height and weight sheet, and I didn't have him at an all-star game. So I don't know. Sometimes you get surprised where you're like, oh, that's weird. But it would also be weird if NC State was handing a guy that's like 5'8", like 180 the ball times. So
yeah.
I'm pretty bullish on him right now.
Yeah, I'm really excited. And definitely those him and Lemon are the two guys that like I'm watching those measurables for sure. Because for me, I think from a film perspective, I don't think that limits your ability to get open or play outside. But teams do have those thresholds. Right. Like you mentioned, especially again, as we get heavier personnel packages on the field, those smaller slot-based guys – especially if we're talking about fantasy, they're not going to have that level of opportunity that you want them to have.
Yeah, no, I'm with you all the way. It's such an interesting wide receiver group, man, because like it's so role defined across the board in a lot of ways. You bring up Lemon. Denzel Boston's interesting because he didn't have a defined role in Washington. They actually were creative with him, but he looks like a true X, like outside, big bodied. You're going to block. And then, you know, you get deeper into the group. Like Malachi Fields has really been rising. And
you were just talking about him in the last segment. Right? There you go. Yeah. More validation potentially. We'll see.
Man, the draft is funny, right? Because you do this long enough where it's like, I'll have a guy in September and October, and I'm like, man, I love this third rounder. And I'm talking about like Emmanuel McNeil Warren, the safety on Toledo. And I'm talking about Malachi Fields. And I'm like, these are my guys, like in the third round or fourth round. And you see them in like you see them in mainstream mock drafts in the winter or the early spring, and you're like, okay, like the fun's gone. Like, yeah. I that's a different investment, right? It's a different projection.
Yeah, I think, DJ had him as like going to the Bills at the end of the
first round.
That's a big swing there.
That's a big statement for a guy. Like the ball skills at the catch point are impressive. He blocks. He's played at two programs at a. I like guys that have played consistent at two programs because it tells me that you've been through a transition already, that you can adapt, whether it's a new staff or whether it's a new environment, because that's what you're going to be asked to do at the NFL. So the guys that the transfer portal in a weird way as a draft analyst actually helps you learn a little bit more about guys.
Interesting. Yeah. Boone, any other players you want to throw out here?
Well, like we mentioned earlier, the running back class, like behind Love, there's no consensus number 2 running back right now. And oddly enough, his teammate, Jadarian Price, gets thrown into that spot a little bit. And I have a hard time with it. Like when I watch that film, I see it with Love. I see that the prospect, the potential, you know, elite player there. When I watch Price, I feel like he's really benefiting from that ecosystem, from that environment, from that really good offensive line there. And how many times, and I know, you know, fantasy is a probabilities game, but how many times it has happened, but have we seen that many times a backup running back come into the NFL and end up having a ton of success after being a backup in college? It's happened, but not that frequently.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, right? Like, there's been some guys where you're like, why were they on the bench in that situation? We go back to Alvin Kamara. He was a weird one like that. Man, with Jadarian, there's a lot to like, though. Like, if you're going to run an outside zone, like, you feel, like, pretty good about what you've seen on tape from him and that and his ability to transition into that. He's got a muscled-up upper body where I think he's bigger than his listed weight. And you see, like, if tacklers come in high against him, they fall off of him a lot. The sneaky one for me as an evaluator, the new kickoff rules, I think he could be the best kick returner in the NFL.
Yeah, interesting.
And like fantasy, we're like, nah, whatever. But like an NFL team, it's
keeps you on the roster.
If I get 2 touchdowns out of kick returns a year and good field position at this setup, he was an amazing kick returner at Notre Dame when asked to do it. There is a ceiling in pass pro that we have to project because they don't throw him the ball. Like but in pass pro, low center of gravity, effort, active hands, where a coach is like, all right, you're going to do those things. We're going to put you on the field. Let's give you some throws in space. So I like him a lot. The fumbles concern me the most out of anything. The fumble rate in the limited workload is pretty high. But it's not a good running back class, man. Like, there's guys that are interesting. You have Love, who's great. Jadarian, I really, really like. Jonah Coleman, who's not going to run that well, and people will be like, oh, is he that good? Like, it's not his game. He's so good in tight windows and tight spaces. Jonah Coleman is a really good player, in my opinion. It's like Emmett Johnson kind of territory. It's you know, there's a weird drop-off after those 4. I thought the Penn State guys kind of ran hot and cold a lot of the year, which was a disappointment at the time. And then you're getting to, like, Mike Washington and some different names.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting running back group to watch because there's really not, as I said earlier, there's really not that many open spots for running backs anyways. And we've got a big group of free agents here as well. So the chairs will be shuffled here from a running back standpoint.
I said to Harmon, too, this year, because of the way dynasty drafts are kind of setting up right now, we talked about the receivers, the group, about 6 to 8 guys up at the top. I am very, very conscious that we could have this year one of those like day 3 backs gets that perfect landing spot.
Yeah.
And we end up with, dare I say, like a Keyshawn Vaughn situation where all of a sudden now this guy's going in the first round of dynasty rookie drafts.
Kenneth Dixon back in the day.
Yeah,
like
we're
David
overvaluing
Cobb.
Him.
Yeah.
It's kind of wide open at the end of the first round right now. There's a lot of guys that could sneak in there. You mentioned the Penn State running backs. What do you think about Singleton? Because with this injury, with him not really being a part of this pre-draft process, but he should be healthy eventually here. Like, people, I feel like, aren't talking about him right now.
He needs
any thoughts there?
He needs a pro day because he's explosive. Like, the testing is big for him at his weight. If he comes in at 220, 225, and he runs well and jumps well, which he should, that's only going to put him back on the radar. Now, the thing with Singleton that's weird is, the actual running aspect of the position, he's just been kind of average at times. He didn't have the big breakaway speed you were hoping for, the power. You watch him in the pass game, like that's where his bread and butter is made. He's going to pass protect. He's going to catch the ball and get that speed building up. But, you know, you bring up, a broken foot from the Senior Bowl. That hurts not having him at the combine. And there's no way around it, man. Like, you watch Penn State deeper into the year transition to this is Catron Allen's backfield. They were better that way. That always worries me a little bit. And Allen more downhill. I mean, his nickname's Fat Man. Like, he's a thumping kind of runner. Like, and he likes the nickname. Like,
he does.
Yeah.
First person that's ever liked that.
Fat Man. Because he just kind of plows through defenders and pushes the pile forward where he could be like, what if the Texans on day 3 take Catron Allen and they didn't really do much to the backfield and Joe Mixon is the biggest mystery? That would be the scenario you're talking about. Like, right. I'm at like the 1-9. I'll take Catron Allen. He looks good in OTAs.
Well, let me tell you what. I'm 100% rooting for Fat Man now. That is what I'm rooting for here. Last one for you here. I want you to unpack Kenyon Sadiq for me because I feel like he's been a little bit of polarizing prospect.
Yeah,
there's a wide range of opinions on him. But, I mean, I'm obsessed with like figuring out how these tight ends are going to be used and deployed in these offenses that are really weaponizing the position. What do you think about him as a prospect projecting into the league?
Definitely high risk, high reward. Me and Sims just had him, and he's a really interesting dude because he's very cerebral. He's from Idaho. So he's like, he was just like the best player in his state by a mile. Just dominated that where people are like, you're going to be that good everywhere else. And it's like, no, he's really impressive in college as well. So a premium athlete, insanely like carved out of stone kind of player.
Yeah.
You watch some of the stuff they do with him. It's very unique. Yeah, how many tight ends get a screen and run to the house or then are in the backfield as a lead blocking, like fullback, H-back kind of role. But then he also runs the seam and runs by people. They underutilized him at Oregon, which I think was a little bit of a mistake.
Okay.
They should have had a better plan for him. And he's going to be landing spot dependent to me. Like, if you put Kenyon Sadiq, I think a landing spot with the way the draft is stacked up, the Niners and the Broncos.
Broncos is the one that really makes a lot of sense.
Now, I think he's going to run a 4.4 here, so I don't know if we're making it to pick 30.
Yeah.
Like, I really think it's that kind of speed where it's just the thing that gives me a little bit more promise with him is he takes the blocking element very, very seriously, and coaches will keep him on the field if it could stay that way, where he's going to be 245. It's not the biggest kind of guy, but George Kittle's not the biggest kind of guy, and he's not going to be George Kittle. But is there an offense where that's maximized, where you're out there and you're impacting the run game, and then we can throw you the football? So he's super young player. He's insanely talented, but it's going to be very landing spot specific.
You do see him like out in the open field really square up with guys from a blocking standpoint, and that is obviously
with passion.
He gets after it, which is pretty cool. I thought of like Vernon Davis, just the entire profile, you know,
after
like,
the 40 time, I guarantee that's all you'll hear.
Okay, good. Well, you're ahead of the game here if you're watching the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast right now, because you'll be able to get this Vernon Davis comparison now. So I think he's going to be a freak, and just I love both those landing spots. Niners are interesting too, because like they have just a gaping hole at wide receiver, but could this be like a creative way that they fill
between.
That they fill the pass catcher
role
there.
Think about where they're picking, and like you brought up Concepcion, okay, so maybe he's there or not, But it's no man's land,
yeah,
kind of scenario.
And they kind of need someone, too, to get Ricky Pearsall off of X. I'm a huge Pearsall guy. Yeah. I'm a big fan of him as a prospect and what we've seen so far. Obviously, injuries, of course. But the other thing this year was he was kind of more of the vertical receiver than you probably would have wanted. So I think they probably need somebody like a Denzel Boston, who many people are saying is the Diet Coke Mike Evans. I said that on the show in San Francisco at the Super Bowl.
And it's stuck ever since.
Yeah, and it's stuck. But it's like, he's the guy that I think can move around as well. But yeah, some big player like that I think would really help unlock their offense. Any other prospects, Connor, before we get you out of here that you think the people should know?
Man, an interesting player we had today is Justin Joly in the Tennessee group, because like he's a weird one. He was a two-star wide receiver recruit not too far where I'm from in Westchester, New York, out of Iona. Goes to UConn. God, he's a monster. Like 10.5-inch hands. He's such a good pass catcher. His contested catch rate is off the charts. He's gotten better as a blocker. He's going to have to keep growing in that area. But you look at a tight end that can make an impact, that's not going to go that early. That would be somebody that is just, he's really intriguing.
Yeah, kind of a sneaky deep tight end class, I feel like. For fantasy, there's a lot of intriguing names that I think when people are getting to like the third, fourth round of their dynasty drafts, they should really keep those names in mind. I mean, we just saw last year a bunch of guys. I mean, Harold Vanden was falling to that range, and look what happened, right? So it's tough to project. We were talking the last segment about tight ends and targets and where are they going to fit in their offenses. But yeah, I think that's one spot that I'll definitely be going heavy.
A lot of names to know at the tight end position. Connor Rogers, that's a name to know. NBC Sports, NFL Stock Exchange. What can you promote there for the people to check out this draft season?
The NFL on NBC YouTube channel. We have all these interviews. There'll be tons on there. Sims and I are doing the show as many times as we can this week. We've had a lot of the top prospects on, so everything is over there, and I appreciate you guys having me on. So I didn't actually just sit here in silence.
You actually brought a lot to the table.
I talked a little too much. It's like kind of embarrassed how I open things up and how I finish.
No, that's fine. It was perfect. It was perfect. It was great to have you, Connor. Boone, always good to talk to you as well. That's going to do it for today's show, but we will be back on Monday with our very first Mock Draft Monday of draft season. It's going to be a Football 301 Yahoo Fantasy Forecast crossover, which is weird branding because I'm on both shows, Nate's on both shows, so what is the point of the cross branding anyways? But that means that we get to bring Justin Boone into the mix. So really, this is just a Boone crossover. Anyways, that show is going to be out on Monday on all of the feeds. Until then, we are out.